Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Yes, it is very special. Wimbledon was always my favorite tournament, will always be my favorite tournament, and my heroes walked the grounds here and walked the courts here, and because of them, I think I became a better player too. So to mark history here at Wimbledon really means a lot to me.
That's Roger Federer, the Swiss tennis star, who marked history at Wimbledon by winning his record 8th men's singles title and 19th Grand Slam trophy.
Winning 8 is not something you can ever aim for, in my opinion. And if you do, I don't know, you must have so much talent and parents and the coaches that push you from an age of 3 on who think that you're like a project. And I was not that kid. I was just a really normal guy growing up in Basel and hoping to make a career on the tennis tour, and I guess I dreamed, I believed, and really hoped that maybe I could actually really do it, you know, to make it real.
35-year-old Roger Federer made it real by beating Croatia's Marin Cilic in straight sets in the final, 6-3, 6-1, and 6-4. Cilic cried during a changeover in the second set, realizing his dreams of a first Wimbledon title were being dashed by a bad blister on his foot.
Well, it was definitely one of the unfortunate days for me. I got a really bad blister. Even I felt it in the match with Querrey in the semis, and fluid just came down under my callus in the foot. And I want to thank the physios here, Alejandro and Graham and Dr. Phil. They helped last 30 hours. They were just constantly almost with me, and they did as much as they could, but unfortunately I still felt the pain. And every time I had to do a reaction fast change of movement, I was unable to do that, and obviously it was very tough emotionally.
In the women's singles final at Wimbledon, Spain's Garbiñe Muguruza defeated longtime American star Venus Williams in straight sets 7-5 and 6-love. At 37, Venus was trying to become the oldest female champion in Wimbledon history. But the 23-year-old Muguruza showed her tennis toughness, especially during some long rallies near the end of the first set. It was the second Grand Slam title for the Spanish player. Muguruza defeated Venus's younger sister, Serena, in last year's French Open final. In the process, she became the first player to defeat both Williams sisters in Grand Slam finals. Talk to us, Garbiñe!
I always come very motivated to the Grand Slams. And I don't know, since I lost the final here, you know, I wanted to change that, and I came thinking I'm prepared, I feel good, and during the tournament and the matches, I was feeling better and better, and every match I was increasing my level, and I think today I played well.
Garbiñe Muguruza didn't just play well, according to Venus Williams.
She played really well. I mean, she played top tennis, so I have to give her credit for just playing a better match, and I've had a great 2 weeks, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the summer.
From London, let's go to the Midwestern U.S. city of Silvis, Illinois, where the 2015 U.S. amateur and NCAA golf champion has won his first PGA Tour title. Reporter George McNeely tells us more from the TPC Deer Run course in Illinois.
There's a new first-time winner on the PGA Tour. California's Bryson DeChambeau became the 19th first-time champ at the John Deere Classic.
I've always loved the golf course. First time I saw it, and then coming this year, I was really excited because I was hitting the ball really well and just needed a couple putts to fall.
23-year-old DeChambeau shot a 6-under par 65 in the final round to overtake Patrick Rogers, who finished one shot back.
Having the 36-hole lead and the 54-hole lead, because you know your tendency when you have the lead is to kind of hold on and play safe and guard against making mistakes, but I had guys coming at me. There were some really low rounds, and obviously Bryson shot a great one today. So it's great experience for the future, and I look forward to winning very soon.
DeChambeau played like no one was watching, racking up 6 birdies on the back nine. He also qualifies for the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale.
Feels like it's been a long time coming, even though I'm 23. It's pretty special to win here at the John Deere. Didn't know that Payne Stewart's first win was here, and that broke me. It was pretty special, so God bless him. He's done some amazing things for the game of golf, and I hope I can do something similar down the road. But thanks to Claire Peterson as well, tournament director. He's done an incredible job. I was here in 2015 on a sponsor's invite, so thank you to him for that. And thank you to John Deere for what they do, sponsoring this event every single year. They do an incredible job.
Bryson DeChambeau, the winner of the John Deere Classic, while Wesley Bryan and Rick Lamb were both two shots back at minus 16. Meantime, Zach Johnson and Steve Stricker, along with three others, finished three shots off the pace at 15 under par. Bryson DeChambeau, the winner of the 2017 John Deere Classic. For the Sunny Side of Sports, George McNeely, Silvis, Illinois.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Joining us now with a package of African sports news is reporter Samson Omale. And Samson kicks off with some sad football news out of Senegal.
8 football fans died after a stampede broke out at the Stade Demba Diop Stadium in Senegal on Saturday evening during the League Cup final match between Union Sportive Alkem FC and Stade Umbo FC. A wall collapsed at the football stadium, injuring almost 90 people after fighting began between rival fans, and police had to respond with tear gas when Umbo FC took a 2-1 lead over their rivals Ousso FC. Senegalese journalist Temba John Matthew from Dakar.
Government spokesman Seydou Gueye said the government, they're not going to take this very lightly. They really expressed regrets over the incident, but judicial inquiry should open not only sporting activities, even the country was really, they were only legislative campaigns. All that have been suspended.
Uganda have resumed training ahead of their 2018 CHAN qualifier return march against South Sudan. The Cranes got back to Kampala after their goalless draw in the first leg on Saturday. The squad trained at the Philip Omodi Stadium on Sunday under the watch of their coach Milton Micho Sredjajovic.
We don't need to put pressure on the team and players. Pressure need to stay with me and technical bench. Let players come on the field, relax, focus, concentrated, and the most important, responsible to score the goal and goals and to qualify us forward in the CHAN qualifiers.
In all the games played across all the venues on the African continent this past weekend, Mauritania beat Liberia 2-0. Togo national team, the Hawks, managed to hold their opponents, Benin Republic, to a 1-1 draw at home as Zimbabwe failed to produce the magical form that won them the 2017 COSAFA Cup in South Africa as they fell 1-0 to Namibia. Elsewhere, Angola moved closer to qualifying for CHAN 2018 when they beat host Mauritius 1-0. Zambia made easy work of Swaziland as they recorded a 4-goal advantage in the first leg of the African Nations Championship qualifier. In other games, South Africa defeated a stubborn Botswana side 2-0 as Ethiopia moved to within touching distance of the third round after they defeated host Djibouti 5-1 on Saturday. In athletics news, South Africa finished top of the medals table for the first time at the IWAF World Under 18 Athletics Championship in Nairobi as the 5-day championship came to a close on Sunday. South Africa, who finished 5th in 1999 and 2005, amassed 11 medals altogether. China finished 2nd in the medals table with 5 gold, 2 silver and 4 bronze medals. Host Kenya finished a disappointing 4th with 1 gold, 7 silver and 4 bronze medal. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Now let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where quarterfinal action kicks off Wednesday night in the CONCACAF Gold Cup, a regional championship football tournament for teams in North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. In the first quarterfinal in Philadelphia, Costa Rica will play Panama, and that will be followed by a match between the United States and El Salvador. On Thursday, there will be two more quarterfinals. Near the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, Jamaica will go against Canada, and then Honduras will play defending champion Mexico, winners of a record 7 Gold Cup trophies. The Mexicans wrapped up group play Sunday with a 2-0 win over Curaçao at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. Angel Sepulveda scored Mexico's first goal in the 22nd minute, when he knocked in a header, and Edson Alvarez scored in the 90th minute, shortly after injury time was added. Mexico finished atop Group C with 7 points from 3 matches. Curaçao, which was playing in its first Gold Cup, finished with no points. In another Gold Cup result Sunday, Jamaica and El Salvador drew 1-1 in San Antonio. Both teams advanced out of Group C based on points. The Reggae Boys of Jamaica finished 2nd in the group with 5 points, while El Salvador had 4 points. El Salvador, as I mentioned, will next play the USA on Wednesday night in Philadelphia. Under Gold Cup rules, teams are allowed to make 6 roster changes, up to 6 roster changes after the group stage, and U.S. coach Bruce Arena took full advantage. He brought in 6 new players for the knockout stage. Goalkeepers Tim Howard and Jesse Gonzalez, midfielders Michael Bradley and Darlington Nagbe, and strikers Clint Dempsey and Josie Altidore. All the players, with the exception of Gonzalez, are expected to start on Wednesday night. The USA wrapped up group play Saturday with a 3-0 victory over Nicaragua in Cleveland, Ohio. The Americans are 5-time Gold Cup champions, and they finished atop Group B with 7 points from 3 matches. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Athletics news now on the VOA. Botswana's Nigel Amos was one of five African winners Sunday at the IAAF Diamond League meet in Rabat, Morocco. The 23-year-old Amos won Botswana's first ever Olympic medal, a silver, 5 years ago in the men's 800 meters race in London. In Rabat, Amos clocked 1 minute and 43.91 seconds. As he tuned up for next month's World Championships in the British capital. Three Moroccan athletes also were winners in Rabat. Brahim Akachab led a 1-2-3 Moroccan finish in the men's 1500 meters, clocking a winning time of 3 minutes and 35.03 seconds. Another Moroccan, Abdelati Eguider, won the men's 3,000 meters race in 7 minutes and 37.82 seconds. And one more Moroccan, Soufiane El Bakkali, won the men's 3,000 meter steeplechase race in 8 minutes and 5.12 seconds. The fifth African winner came in the men's long jump with South Africa's Ruchwal Samai leaping 8.35 meters. Olympic 100-meter champion Elaine Thompson of Jamaica won her 14th straight race at that distance in Rabat. Elaine clocked 10.87 seconds. Marie-Josée Talou of Ivory Coast finished in second place in the 100 meters. She clocked 10.90 seconds. Another Olympic champion, Ryan Krauser of the USA, won the men's shot put in Rabat with a distance of 22.47 meters. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Monday?
Lots to talk about on the grass courts of the All England Lawn Tennis Club, and we'll start with RF19. The postal code where Wimbledon is SW19.
Okay.
But the talk this weekend was RF19. Of course, Roger Federer, his 19th record-extending Grand Slam title. He already had the record with 18. He already had the record when he passed Pete Sampras and got to 15. And now he has his record-extending 19th title, his record 8th Wimbledon title. Lots of emotions on the court that people were talking about over the weekend as Roger Federer won that title. Marin Cilic of Croatia, who he's playing, broke down in tears at one point during the match. Federer broke down after the match, seeing his children there. And I think it's best encapsulated by this tweet that Roger Federer sent out. He said, "Number 19 tastes great." And it's a photo of him kissing that famous trophy there. So lots of congratulations across the internet for Roger Federer. A momentous win there at Wimbledon and just extending his legacy as the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
Andrew, I was talking with our producer this evening, Bill Werkinger, before the show. And Roger's decision to skip the French Open to prepare and rest for Wimbledon sure looks like a pretty good decision right now.
Indeed, and one that, to be fair, not even Roger Federer expected. He said, you know, maybe I could have gotten to one final of one of the Grand Slam tournaments. Never thought that he could win not just his 8th Wimbledon, but keep in mind he already won the Australian Open earlier this year. So he's actually right now the man that's won the most Grand Slam tournaments this year. And so far, it's been Federer and Nadal winning the French Open. So pretty amazing stuff from these two veterans coming back and putting the young guns down and saying, hey, wait a minute, we're not done yet.
What else is trending at Wimbledon, Andrew?
Well, on the women's side, it was the veteran who was unable to prevail, Venus Williams, falling to Garbiñe Muguruza of Spain, 7-5, 6-0, Muguruza capturing her second Grand Slam title, first Wimbledon title. Both women having some funny viral moments on the court at the end of the match. Muguruza very gracious in her victory, but she said she watched Venus when she was growing up and that she's one of her idols. That got a bit of a laugh from the crowd there. People have noted that Venus Williams has been playing some women that could in theory, based on the age, be her daughters. So that's pretty amazing stuff. Got a little bit of a laugh, and Muguruza said, you know, no disrespect, I mean that as a compliment, that you're one of my heroes. And Venus, even though it was a tough loss for her, she said in that post-match interview that she thinks there'll be a few more opportunities for her going forward to make the final at a major. So she's thinking that this is just the beginning of this resurgence that she's experiencing. Venus also had a viral moment in the press conference after the match because a reporter asked her, he said, at this age, 37, you're not supposed to be doing what you're doing right now. Can you talk about why you're here? Venus takes a moment, lets it sit for a beat, and then replies, I believe those aren't my thoughts or words, that I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right now. So Venus putting those critics down, saying that even though she's 37, she's the oldest woman to make it to a Wimbledon final in 23 years. She's just beginning.
Venus played a very competitive first set against Muguruza in the women's finals. Andrew, some really long rallies, especially at the end, both players hitting the ball very hard. I think maybe it took a little bit out of Venus come that second set.
I think it was that for sure, and the emotions. We've talked about that accident that she was involved in, where initially she was put at blame for that accident, and then she was cleared of the blame. She's had to deal with that in the past few weeks. A lot of very tough matches that she's had to play. And Venus said, too, that sometimes her shots were just not hitting where she needed them to. And she gave Muguruza credit, said that she played lights-out tennis, and she really deserved to win, and win she did.
How about a shout out for the lady known as the Swiss Miss?
The Swiss Miss, Martina Hingis, retired and came back and retired and came back. And now she is a Wimbledon champion yet again, winning in the mixed doubles with Jamie Murray, who is the brother of Andy Murray, of course, who broke that long streak without a British man winning at Wimbledon. There was guaranteed to be a British champion at Wimbledon this year because you had Jamie Murray teaming up with Martina Hingis in one side of the mixed doubles, and then you had the defending champions from last year, Heather Watson of the UK and Henri Kontinen of Finland. So you were guaranteed to have a Brit winning, and it was Andy Murray and Martina Hingis prevailing there in the mixed doubles. As far as the men's and women's doubles, because we don't talk about that as much. We talk a lot about the singles. There's a lot of focus on these high wattage stars, Venus Williams, Roger Federer. So we'll give the doubles some love. The women's doubles and the men's doubles this year, very unusual, very disparate, different outcomes. In the women's doubles, you had Ekaterina Makarova and Elena Vesnina, who were the 2016 Olympic gold medalists. They won in just 55 minutes, 6-love, 6-love. Double bagel, as they call it. First double bagel in the women's doubles final at Wimbledon in nearly 65 years. So very historic stuff from them. And on the men's side, Lukasz Kuba and Marcelo Melo defeating Olivier Marac and Matej Pavic in 5 sets. The last set, 13-11. This match went on for nearly 5 hours. So very different. You had the women's match under an hour, the men's match almost 5 hours for them to win. Very impressive stuff from both sides, though, in those two victories. So congratulations to those winners as well.
Andrew, I couldn't help but notice during the women's final, Conchita Martinez in the stands watching one of her pupils, Garbiñe Muguruza. Parallels Conchita winning Wimbledon way back when she beat a 37-year-old opponent, Martina Navratilova.
Yeah.
So some parallels there.
Maybe some tips from her for young people.
What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, one of the nice traditions at Wimbledon, in addition to what happens on the court, and it is seeped in tradition, is the Champions Dinner, where the men's and women's singles and doubles teams, the mixed doubles teams, all go and enjoy the fruits of their labor at a nice dinner. In previous years, the men's and women's singles winners have danced together. That's been a tradition they've kind of done away with, although Serena and Novak Djokovic did dance together back in 2015, so they revived that a little bit. But we saw a little bit of that on Twitter. After Federer won, Garbiñe Muguruza tweeted at him, "Are you ready to dance? Hashtag Champions Dinner." And Federer replied, "Bring it on, champ," with two dancing emojis. So the two of them did not dance, unfortunately. There was no dance floor at the venue where they had that dinner. But the two of them having some fun and having a little bit of Twitter back and forth after they won their respective championships.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the July 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
July 11th marked the sixth anniversary of South Sudan's independence. But South Sudan and its people are suffering. The treasury is empty. And so President Salva Kiir canceled the celebration. Although a number of issues have complicated the situation, South Sudan's problems are largely man-made. Much of it can be blamed on South Sudan's leaders, who are unwilling to set aside personal differences and political ambitions for the good of the country. In one way or another, South Sudan has been the scene of fighting for over half a century. The Comprehensive Peace Agreement of 2005 ended the Second Civil War that pitted South Sudanese rebels against the government in Khartoum. The referendum for independence 6 years later led to the birth of South Sudan, ushering in an era of hope and optimism for the war-weary population. But peace in the new country lasted less than 18 months. In December 2013, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar erupted into civil war as the country split along ethnic lines. A 2015 peace agreement and a transitional government, formed in early 2016, failed to end the violence. The fighting that continues today has led to a collapsing economy, food insecurity, hunger, malnutrition, and imposed unimaginable violence on the South Sudanese. Today, some 6 million people, more than half the country's population, live with extreme food insecurity. 4 million have been displaced, the majority of them children. And around 300,000 people, the vast majority of them civilians, have been killed. The birth of South Sudan in 2011 was marked by hope for a peaceful and prosperous future, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. We deeply regret that the second chance made possible by the formation of the Transitional Government of National Unity in April 2016 was squandered. Following the collapse of the permanent ceasefire in July 2016, the armed conflict expanded across the country, and the parties to the conflict remain unwilling to return to the negotiating table, she said. The United States remains deeply committed to a stable and inclusive South Sudan, and stresses once again that there is no military solution to this conflict. On this day, meant to celebrate South Sudan's creation, we call upon South Sudan's leaders and all parties to end this self-destructive violence, to return to political dialogue, and to help South Sudan realize its full potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on African elections. What makes a ballot credible? Some political observers say African elections are often merely selections. We'll tackle the difference on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guess.